Well, Nick, always a tough one when you lose a series, no doubt about it. Kind of a bizarre situation where the most runs in this game were given up by both Griffin Jacks and Chad Green, both guys who are usually for their respective teams pretty terrific in most appearances, but they both get knocked around a bit, and this game in the eighth inning goes from 3-1 Blue Jays to 4-3 Twins, and that unfortunately is how the series ends in Minnesota. The Blue Jays open September with a loss, and they are now 67-72 as we begin September.
Yeah, Chad Green in particular had been fantastic basically all season long, right? Yep. Like, he brought a 1.61 ERA into this game. That's up to 2.17 now just from that little bit of action there. He'd given up less than 10 earned runs all year before this one. So it's not 100% clear. Maybe we'll hear from John Schneider whether the plan was to have him pitch two innings there, or they thought they wanted him to pitch the most dangerous hitters the Twins had and then remove him later. Again, maybe we'll hear a little bit on that. I think either plan is justifiable heading into the off day. And that's something that Green has done throughout his career too. Like, he has a little bit more length than a traditional closer, but you know, the velocity was there for him. You could say the stuff was there in a sense, but he hung up two really sliders right in the middle of the plate. And one of them was to Jeffers, and that was a single. He didn't get burned that badly. And then one of them was on the home run ball. Like, that was a pitch that was an, you know, it was a breaking ball center cut. Like, it's about as good a pitch to hit home run off of as you can possibly imagine. And these things happen even to guys who are as good as Green is.
Yeah, he hung that 87-mile-an-hour slider to, of all people, Royce Lewis. He doesn't miss many of those, but most major leaguers, I think, would punish pitches like that. And Lewis, who has a lot of power, certainly did. And Lewis, I would say, quickly climbing the ranks of Blue Jays killers in a very short period of time. Not perhaps in the rarefied air that Ryan Mountcastle seems to certainly occupy. But even so, tough outing for Green, who had been so good for most of the season. And like you said, he's given up home runs here and there. Like, I think the only other big spot I can think of is Chad Green giving up the home run for the walk-off by J.J. Bleda when the Blue Jays were in Oakland. That was the game where Chris Bassett threw all eight innings, and then the first pitch of the ninth inning went to Bleda, who jacks it for a home run. So I just, it's a tough situation for Green, certainly, but I'm not really sure that should change anyone's, I mean, it happens, right? But I'm not sure it should change necessarily anyone's opinion of Chad Green, even if I'm not sure he is a bona fide closer necessarily, if only because I think, you know, there are probably only a handful of those kinds of guys in Major League Baseball, period. And like, even Joan Duran runs into trouble sometimes, but he's one of those guys. Emmanuel Clase is one of those guys. Even if Chad Green's like one notch below, I'm not sure it should really change your overall opinion of him.
He's a credible high leverage arm in this league, right? Like, even in his best seasons with New York, it was more about putting him into situations where he was facing often the best hitters the other team had to offer, or when there are guys on base. Like, he was that fireman, right? Like, before this year, he had never had more than six saves in a season. Yeah. And yeah, I'm not going to be that person who says, oh, this guy cannot be a closer because he hasn't been a closer in the past. I think sometimes we can get wrapped up in exactly having that role. Sometimes it's better to be a little bit more flexible. I think of Jimmy Garcia with the Blue Jays earlier this year, right? Like, he was clearly the best reliever on the team, or the guy pitching the best, and they didn't always use him as a closer because sometimes it's better to be more flexible. Green has been that sort of guy. But going into next year, I do believe if the Blue Jays think that he's the best reliever on the team, that's not an ideal situation to be in, because I'm not sure he's quite the guy that he was when he was with the Yankees. You know, and he's older now. He's into his 30s. He's suffered some injuries as well. Like, it's reasonable that as he approaches his mid-30s, he might not be the guy he was when he was 27, 28 or something like that. I still don't think anyone should lose hope that he's someone they can't trust. He's a trustworthy veteran. But at the same time, they will definitely give some thought to the back end of the bullpen heading into 2025.
That is Nick Ashbourne, and I'm Sho Ali. You're listening to Jays Talk, of course, live on the Sportsnet Radio Network. We're also streaming on sportsnet.ca and on the Sportsnet app. You can give us a call, 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. You can text us as well, 590-590, name and location. The People's Text Line, always open. Standard messaging and data rates may apply. You know what? Let's talk a little bit about Yariel Rodriguez to start before we go to the phones. Three innings from Rodriguez, three hits, no runs, two walks, three strikeouts. He threw 57 pitches in three innings of work, 33 of them were strikes. So we'll wait to hear from John Schneider, certainly, Nick, because I am curious, because, of course, the team doesn't have anyone speak on Sundays, right? So there was no discussion to the media prior to the game that said, hey, this is what's going to happen with Yariel Rodriguez. Like, this is the plan, the game plan today, which is something we sometimes hear when we're talking about the pregame and so on that the Blue Jays give in the beginning of the games. But probably a number of reasons he was taken out, I suppose. Like, John Schneider has spoken about his workload the last couple of starts post-game, how they're really trying to thread the needle between not overworking him, but also keeping him on turn. There are a few off days coming up this month that will allow the team to rework their starting rotation plans, like, to a certain extent, at the very least. He's a guy who has never pitched this much in a season before, obviously much less in Major League Baseball, because technically he's a rookie, having never pitched in the majors before. And yeah, he does, like, his stuff just also didn't look great today. I think that's obviously a factor in any game, but I am curious, just like, if you're looking at like a pie chart, how much of it was pre-planned and how much of it was, okay, like, we got to cut this outing short. We got to pull the trigger and get him out of this ball game. Cause it does kind of feel like he was somewhat fortunate to exit this game without giving up a run, especially after loading the bases in the first inning. And again, when you're talking about that pie chart, for reasons taking Yariel Rodriguez out, you saw a couple guys warm right away. Both Pop and Yarbrough warmed prior to Y-Rod getting taken out of this game. But I also wonder how much of the equation is simply Ryan Yarbrough had not pitched since Monday, since the doubleheader against the Boston Red Sox, and he has been someone who's been pretty effective this season. So I kind of wonder, like, when you're looking at all of those reasons for why Yariel Rodriguez did not go deep into this game, I wonder how much of it is in each of those little boxes there.
There's a number of factors that go into it. As you mentioned, there's a workload, so they are managing him. They are not treating him like he is, you know, Jose Barrios or Chris Bassitt or a veteran pitcher that you kind of run out there and you let the performance dictate. He's someone they're being very careful with. At the same time, I doubt they went into this game and said, you know what, 57, 60 pitches is a limit. Like, normally they push him further than that. It's been in the 70s or in the 80s a lot of the time. Some of this is performance-based. It's weird for me to say that because he didn't give up any runs in this game, but he really labored. And, like, he had some luck, too. In that first inning that you referenced, by my count, there were two separate occasions where if it weren't for a very generous call from the ump, he would have walked a guy. And he got outs in both. Those are actually the first two outs that he got. So there's a version of this start where things go absolutely sideways from the beginning. My thought is the Blue Jays saw that this outing was kind of, it was difficult. His stuff was not sharp. His velocity wasn't as bad as it's been in some of his recent outings, but it still wasn't as good as it's been when he's been at his best either. So I think they probably suspected if we lift him now, it's something that you can take as somewhat of a positive. Like, we got some scoreless innings there. He did his turn, as you mentioned. He kept building up his workload, but he didn't push anything and he didn't have any negatives, because I'm sure confidence is a factor right now. He has really scuffled badly in his last three starts or so. So I imagine they think, okay, we'll take him out early because we see things, the train is a little bit off the tracks here, even if he's been able to keep runs off the board to this point. Let's just bring Yarbrough in. He's rested. You've got the off day coming, too. That's a factor as well, because you knew that you could use a lot of the bullpen and then it would be relatively fresh. And then there's another off day coming down the pike as well. So they knew that they could really lean on the bullpen here, and it probably seemed like a good idea to get him out early before things went wrong.
416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell, 590-590, name and location. Those are the numbers for you to call. That is the text line as well, the People's Text Line, which, of course, is always open. You can certainly reach us in either of those ways. If you do reach us on the text line, don't forget, standard messaging and data rates may apply. All right, let's go to the phones. Let's start with Byron from right here in Toronto. Byron, welcome to Jays Talk. What's on your mind today?
Well, gentlemen, I'm very happy to be on Jay's Talk, but I have a different theory. Not only should they have gone to try to win this game, they should be trying to go for the wild card. I mean, let's face it, they're only 8 games out of making the wild card. In 2015, we went on that streak after all the different trades were made, and now all of a sudden we've got a really hot lineup. We've got a guy who pitched probably one of the most exciting games of the season in Bowden Francis, who came this close to a no-hitter. And we've got Vladdy and Springer sitting on the bench today, which, like, you try and tell Cal Ripken or Lou Gehrig that they should have sat on the bench. And Vladdy, like, I don't understand it. Well, like, they're resting them. like rest has got them in trouble. Like when they took out Barrios early, like come on guys, go for the wild card. You know, Ross Atkins, you have a job you want to save. It'll make you look good. You're starting to look good, Ross. So, but let's get these guys to go for it all the way.
Hey, Byron, thanks for the call, man. I appreciate it. What do we think? Here's the thing. I don't want to like poo-poo the idea of getting to the wild card, but here are some of the numbers that the Blue Jays did in the month of August, just from a win perspective. So I think we can all agree the Blue Jays in the month of August were great. I think for by and large, they were one of the better teams in Major League Baseball in terms of win pace in the month of August, which of course wrapped up yesterday with a gigantic win. So if you count the suspended game, I think for these purposes, we should, just because they played that game.
It was in August.
Yeah. Like, they physically played that game this month and they won it. I know it counts towards a series win from June, but whatever. We'll count it for this month. They went 17-12. That is a win pace, you told me, Nick, of near 95 wins. If you kept up that pace all season, obviously they did not do that. But we're talking about the month of August. That's a phenomenal win pace. The Blue Jays right now, after today's loss, are 67-72. So there are 23 games left in the regular season. You got to think, if you look at the wild card race right now, let me just pull up the standings. So you got the Yankees, Guardians, and Astros leading their division. You got the Orioles, Twins, and Royals in the wildcard spots 1, 2, and 3. The Orioles have 78 wins. The Twins have now 74 wins. And the Royals, I think they lost earlier today. I believe they lost earlier today. They have 75 wins. So you got to think that between now and the end of the regular season, even if the Royals, for example, in wildcard 3 have a poor rest of the season. Let's say they only win 10 more games for the rest of the year. I don't know. I think that's pretty unlikely given how the Royals have played. Let's say they only, quote unquote, win 10 more games. They'll end at 85 wins. So that means in theory, the Blue Jays need to get to more than 85 wins. You get to like 85 or 86 wins, I think generously would get you into the playoffs. And that's like not accounting for other teams. You could probably make the argument that it would be 89 or 90 wins, which is where we were kind of at preseason anyways in the spring. But let's just say, for the sake of this argument, it's a generous 85 wins would get you into wildcard 3. To get to 500, the Blue Jays have to go 14-9 for the rest of the season. Like that's against teams like the Phillies, the Mets, the Braves, the Red Sox again, the Rays again, the Cardinals, who have been playing. I mean, the Cardinals just waxed the Yankees earlier this afternoon. And I mean, the Cardinals, I don't know, they're kind of here, neither here nor there when it comes to skill overall in the NL playoff picture. But my point is, I'm not sure it's very doable unless they go on a historic win chase here. I think it's doable to get back to 500. I really do. They'd have to go 14-9 to get back to 500. I think that's possible. It's a difficult proposition, but they need to win. Like, they'd have to go 18-5, if the math is correct, I think, to get to 85 wins. And I mean, that's like a historic win pace.
Yeah, they're not gonna get to 18-5 realistically. Even 500, you're talking about kind of a 98-99 win pace from here on out, which again is conceivable, but that is really difficult for even an accomplished veteran team to do. This is a bunch of young guys trying to prove themselves at this level. What I understand kind of at the baseline of this call is that it is frustrating for fans to watch the Blue Jays not do the most they can to try and win an individual ball game. And this is clear that in the ninth inning of that game, they ran out hitters who were inferior to the guys who were sitting on the bench. And it was a one-run ball game. So I get it when you're sitting at home and you're watching a team that you support not do everything in their power to try and win a game. That is frustrating. And I don't believe that's something the Blue Jays have started doing until it became clear that they were sort of out of the playoff hunt. And that's where they sit right now. If you look at playoff odds, you're talking about, you know, a 0.1%. 8.5 games back is a lot of games at this point of the season, and there are teams in front of them as well. There just isn't an avenue for that. Now, if you want to make the argument that even if you're out of the race, you should always be trying to win no matter what, you should put your foot on the gas because that's a culture thing, I get that. It's impossible to quantify. I don't know. What is the value of a win that doesn't help you make the playoffs versus the value of saying to your veterans, listen, this is your day off. We want to give you rest during this time where we have some off days so that you can really, you know, recover a little bit. Dalton Varsho, for instance, we know he's dealing with a bit of a shoulder thing.
Sure.
You know, George Springer is relatively old at this point. Alejandro Kirk has had a pretty big workload since Danny Jansen left town. There are reasons why resting these guys could be valuable. It's one of those things that's just impossible to know. We don't know. You'll never be able to put a number on the value of that rest, and you'll never be able to put a number on what is that culture worth. And so at the end of the day, they have chosen one over the other. I understand people being upset that they've chosen to go with resting the players, but there is rationale behind that in terms of trying to keep these guys healthy. These guys are important to the franchise. And today's win, as much as it, you know, it sucks if you're spending 2.5-3 hours watching a baseball game and the team you're watching doesn't care about winning. But we knew they didn't care about winning when they wrote that lineup out. Like we talked about in the pregame show, look at who's in this lineup. You're talking about Luis De Los Santos. You're talking about Brian Servin. Like they, at the beginning of the game, had a statement of intent that said, this is a game we do not care very much about winning. So it shouldn't really surprise us that in the ninth inning of the game, they doubled down on that philosophy.
416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. Let's go back to the phones. Kind of along these same lines, actually, that you're discussing, Nick. Mark in Virginia also wanted to talk about the idea of the best players being on the bench in that ninth inning. Mark, what's up?
Yeah, I agree. You know, you got to win every game. They got a day off tomorrow, guys. Are you trying to tell me that Vladdy did the whole game? So did Springer. You know, you got all these fans from all over Western Canada are looking to see a win. He won 15-0 last night. If you don't want to win, John, then let's find a new manager for next year. I'm not here to watch spring training today. They would have been 6.5 behind if they won. 6.5 behind Minnesota. And if you've been along around baseball as long as I have, 6.5 is not a lot to make up in September. I'm really mad. You know, I've been a season ticket holder since 1977, and I'm really mad. Can you keep me on the line because I want to hear the answer? If you hang me up, I can't hear because I'm on the phone.
Hey, Mark, well, we do appreciate you joining us here. I still maintain 6.5 games. If there were 6.5 games back with no one between them and the third wild card spot because everyone else was playing poorly, I'd kind of say, look, it's possible. But there are, like, how many games are between the Blue Jays and the third wild card? Like, between the Blue Jays and Royals. Let's see, the Red Sox, Mariners, Tigers, and Rays are all between them and the Royals. I think that's why I find it so difficult to look at, because it's like it's not just about controlling your own destiny. Like, you kind of need all of those other teams to also have bad outings, right? Like, you could in theory go 18-5 and win your way to 85 wins. Like, you could in theory do that and still have all those other teams also go like 18-5 or like 17-whatever, and then it wouldn't make a difference because everyone's at 85 wins, right? I think that's the only reason
why. Or one of the teams, right?
Or just
like
one.
When you have that many teams in front of you, it's not a matter of, oh, you know, we have to make up so many games. It's that if even one of those teams gets hot, then it just nullifies what you've done. And those teams in front are, you know, 2-3 potentially 4 games ahead of the Blue Jays. So they'd have to, even if they get hot in a way that is still 3 games worse than the Blue Jays, they right. still get in. It is such a difficult road. And again, I want to reiterate, I get it from a philosophical standpoint. You do not want to watch, as you said, a spring training baseball game.
Yeah.
But that's kind of what we signed up for here. Like, that is what watching these young guys play is. And there's a component of that that is really cool. It's like, oh, let's see what we have. There's the novelty of it. There's so much uncertainty around these guys. Some of them could defy expectations and become stars, become staples for the Blue Jays for years to come. That's why I think some people have actually come back and started watching the Blue Jays more since the trade deadline, because now there's something interesting to see. But the flip side of that equation is, you know, when you're watching Justin Turner and Kevin Kiermaier and stuff, that was a bad form of the Blue Jays to watch, the early 2024 Blue Jays.
Yeah.
But on the flip side, they were very much trying to win every single game no matter what. Like, that is what they were playing for. So they're just two different things. Like, one of them was they're trying to win, but they suck and it's a bunch of old guys. And this version is they're not necessarily as focused on winning. It's about development. But the good news is you have these young guys to watch.
You know, it's funny because when, to Mark's point and to Byron's point, the first caller, I do think, and I was sitting here with you at Baseball Control, and the bottom of the ninth or the top of the ninth inning is coming up for the Blue Jays. And I said to you, I'm like, boy, pinch hit everyone. I don't care. Like, I don't care about the positional matchups or who fits in where. Like, if Luis De Los Santos and Brian Servin are hitting for the Blue Jays, I mean, you could, like, first of all, you could actually make the positional switches work if the game went to extras. You could pinch hit Vladdy for Luis De Los Santos. You could pinch hit Kirk for Brian Servin. And, like, you could find a way to make it work. That's the point. Like, you can make it work if you really really had to. I think that the why I understand everyone's frustration with why don't you have those guys work is certainly because in Springer's case, maybe I could kind of understand it. Bit of an older guy, has not had the greatest season. Like, he's still toiling away at getting back to being like a league average bat, essentially. So I kind of understand it, but like it's like harder to stomach when it's like Vladdy and Kirk, two guys who are like pretty young in the prime of their careers. There's an off day tomorrow. Like, I do understand it. If it was a blowout, let's say, if they had been getting absolutely annihilated, or on the flip side, it was like last night where they were running away with it and it was a gigantic laugher, I can kind of understand it. Like, who really cares, right? Like, does it really mean anything for Vladdy and Kirk to get important ABs in, like, at the end of the game? Probably not, right? We already kind of know what they are. But in a one-run game, even if I do agree with some of the texters, there's a text here from, where is it? Rob in Woodstock. He says, I disagree with one of the last callers about why not use Vlad or one of the veterans on the bench late in the game. The win means nothing in the standings. We'll never know what the young players are capable of if they're never allowed to be in those situations where the pressure is on. Let the vets rest, let the kids play, and we can see what they're made of. Like, I really do see that side of the argument as well. But at the same time, I just think, like, optically, it is a bad look to, like, you're watching on TV and you're seeing Luis De Los Santos get blown away by a Duran, like, 100-mile-an-hour fastball, and like cuts to Vladdy sitting on the bench with his sunglasses on. You're kind of like, it's not the best luck, honestly.
Yeah, and to give some credit to the other side here, the guys who are coming up were not necessarily those young guys that you think you might be building around a little bit in the future, right? Like, you are talking about Luis De Los Santos, who is more of a minor league veteran type. I think Brian Servin, although we've seen a lot of him, is probably more of a third catcher minor league veteran type as well. You know, Nathan Lucas, we've talked before, he's 30 years old at this point. He might have a future as an extra outfielder for the Blue Jays or somewhere else in the majors, but it would be easier to defend this if the guys coming up were, say, you know, 3, 4 through 6. If it was Horwitz, Barger, Jimenez,
sure,
guys,
yeah,
who you feel more confident might be part of the team going forward, then you'd say, okay, let's see what these young guys can do. In this case, it does seem like it really was they wanted to rest those guys. And I get that people say, well, there's a rest day tomorrow, but that's part of it, right? Like, over the course of a baseball season, it's actually very difficult to get your guys a couple days of rest in a row. And again, I am not an exercise science person. I cannot tell you what is the value of one day of rest over 2 days of rest, but I believe that that is part of the decision, that they believe that giving them a couple days of rest in a row is meaningfully different than having just a single off day. And, you know, you're right. How strenuous is swinging a bat? You don't know. But then maybe a guy ends up hitting one in the gap and then suddenly they're running. I understand it. But as you said, the optics of it are not especially good. And I do think this would be easier for them to defend if the guys coming to the plate were the young guys they cared about more. Like, yeah, the Loperfidos, the Jimenezes, the Bargers, the Horwitz, you know, even Wagner, guys like that who they do believe will be a part of the team in the future.
We were talking a little bit about Yariel Rodriguez and whether or not there was some discussion about his workload and if it was pre-planned. John Schneider, of course, was asked about this, and let's hear what he had to say. Here's the skipper talking post-game.
I think going forward, we're trying to monitor his, you know, innings workload a little bit. I think you can kind of, you know, we'll see how his outings go, but we want to try to just really, you know, keep him on a routine, but I think be aware of how many innings he's throwing. So that was kind of the plan today, and a little bit of, you know, erratic command. It's not set in stone. It's going to be 3. It could be 5. It could be 6. It kind of depends on his pitch count and how he's throwing it each and every outing. But I think most important thing is to keep him on turn, and we've communicated that with him. He kind of knows where he's at down the stretch.
All right, so I think that actually answers the question for me, because midway through that answer from Schneider, I kind of was like, all right, is he like, do I have to read between the lines here a little bit? But then he actually said it, like, it could be 3 innings, could be 5 innings. It really depends. And he, like, and Schneider himself pointed out the fact that his command was pretty erratic today. Those are the exact words he used. So, I mean, clearly there was a bit of a give, I suppose, and when he could have come out of that game. But I mean, in the third inning, he gets the double play and you'd already had a reliever warming. That's probably it, right? Like, you're probably just, hey, why play with fire when you already know the pitch count is not going to be super elevated? And then on top of that, he didn't have great stuff. Like you said, the velo was all right, but generally speaking, everything from velo to command just wasn't exactly where, didn't look quite as crisp, let's put it that way, based on where we've seen Yariel Rodriguez sit. So I do get it, but that does offer some clarity on why they went to Ryan Yarbrough, who we can talk about certainly, but I mean, I certainly felt a little more comfortable personally once Yarbrough came in the game and he did the thing he has done pretty much his entire Blue Jays career, however short it may be.
Yarbrough definitely looked steadier than Yariel Rodriguez in this game. And as you say, it seems like there wasn't a specific plan for Rodriguez, as it has to be exactly this many innings, or even that it has to be exactly this many pitches. It seems like they're working within the parameters of a relatively short outing and a relatively low pitch count. And I think performance is going to dictate. Like, there'll be games, I'm sure, where maybe, yeah, he looks a little bit better and maybe he rests up a little bit and he's able to throw, yeah, 4 or 5 innings, or, you know, maybe get into 6 innings. Some of the longer starts that Yariel Rodriguez has had, his pitch counts weren't actually very high. Like, he'd have a 6 inning outing, but his pitch count would be in the 80s. So he's able to push, not because they've changed their mind about what they want to do with his workload or how they want to handle him, but just because his pitch efficiency dictated that he could go further into the game. And this was a little bit the opposite of that. Like, it was 3 innings, but it was an inefficient 3 innings. And with the same number of pitches, you could normally get 4 innings or maybe even get into the 5th with, you know, close to 60 pitches there. You know, Yarbrough, he's just doing Yarbrough things. Like, there will come a time where he'll have a Blue Jays outing and I'm sure he'll get hit around because he is not the ace that he's looked like at times with the Blue Jays, or against the Blue Jays for that matter. But you cannot complain with what you've gotten from him since the deadline, because this is what they were hoping for. They were hoping for someone who could soak up innings, considering that they have one member of the rotation that they want to be very conservative with. And the rest of the bullpen is largely inexperienced guys. And to be honest, there just isn't a ton of talent down there. So having a veteran who can give you, you know, 2 to honestly 5 innings sometimes out of the bullpen has been really valuable.
Ryan Yarbrough, 2 1/3, no hits, no walks, no strikeouts, 26 pitches, 17 strikes. I honestly would have liked to see Yarbrough go a little farther. I mean, this is a guy who, like you mentioned, can throw 5 innings if you need him to. After today's appearance, this is courtesy of my pal Josh Goldberg. He has a 2.25 ERA and a 170 opponent's batting average in 7 appearances with the Jays. That's pretty good.
It's good stuff.
I mean, again, 26 pitches from Yarbrough isn't a ton. You probably could have asked him to throw 50 plus pitches. Like, you could have doubled that pitch count. I'm not saying it would have necessarily meant he was going 5 innings, but you could have doubled that pitch count from Yarbrough, even in a close 1-run game on the road, and felt good about it. I think, again, I'm not sure what the future holds for Yarbrough. I think he's a free agent at the end of the season, so there's a really good chance that he signs with another team. He's not that old. He's 32, and I think there is a role for him in a lot of teams' bullpens. But, I mean, at least for the rest of the season, if you are being careful with Yariel Rodriguez, and I think the further we go in the season, you're getting kind of like erratic starts like you did today, I think you're getting a little further away from the conversation of having Yariel Rodriguez in the starting rotation for next season. But for this season, at least until the end of September, I do kind of wonder, Nick, if it might not just be, because you know, they're trying, and Schneider kind of alluded to it in that clip we played, but they're clearly trying to give as many of these starters as much rest as humanly possible. There are a lot of days off in September. There's a day off tomorrow, certainly. There's a day off on Thursday. There's a day off the following Thursday. I believe there's a day off the following Monday as well. If you have actually quite a few rest days in the month of September, as opposed to having like 2 rest days in the whole month of August, which also included a doubleheader. So if that's the case, then you can probably, if you really had to, and if they're really committed to running Yariel Rodriguez out there every 5 starts, then you can probably do a bit of a piggyback start here with Yariel Rodriguez and Yarbrough, like you really had to. I think that would probably work, even if it's not super ideal. But they don't sound like a team ready to take Yariel Rodriguez out of the rotation.
I'd put it this way: if Yariel Rodriguez is expected to pitch a given day, call it a Thursday or whatever, I don't think you're going to see Ryan Yarbrough on the Wednesday. I think they want Yarbrough there to give them a sense of security, because we know that some of these Rodriguez starts, whether it's caution, whether it's inefficiency, whether it's just ineffectiveness, however it ends up, there's just a lot of routes to short starts with Yariel Rodriguez. So you know that when he is going, chances are you're going to need a big amount of innings from the bullpen. And Yarbrough is the best guy to give you those bulk innings in terms of who's on the roster today. So it might not be this guy is piggybacking and that is firmly the plan, so much as let's make sure that he is available to be there for those innings, because we know it is always a possibility when Rodriguez goes out there that you just get, you know, 2, 3, 4 innings from him.
416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. Let's get one more call in before we take a quick break. Let's go to Ajax. John and Ajax joining us here on Blue Jays Talk. John, what's up?
Hey, guys. I want to thank your producer, too. It's taken a couple of shots, but I finally got on, and I want to say a big shout out to both you guys. You do a phenomenal job.
Thank you.
And I first time caller, and I'm glad to be in. I appreciate you getting me in. So I just want to make a couple comments. First off, I have to chuckle because Nick mentioned looking at the lineup today, and I kind of did the same thing, and I could see some of the names in there. And one of them, I think Blair and Barker, again, I'm a big fan of that show too. The guys have touched on it briefly. I think you guys have touched on it briefly before. And I really feel for him. David Schneider, I think they've given him all kinds of opportunity. He knows what he's got to do. He's got to go up there and he's got to hit left-handed pitching. He's got to hit it for power. And he just hasn't been doing it. And I don't see he's got any kind of a plan. I think he's got so much stuff in his head. He just looks completely lost. You know, he's probably aware of all the competition and, you know, he's trying to get himself a spot for next year. But I'm wondering if they shouldn't have sent him down a little while ago, let him work out some things where he's not in the spotlight so much. Maybe there's a guy down there today, Alan Roden. I know you guys know who he is. He was 4-for-5 today. He's got a really great OPS. He's been hitting the ball hard. You know, Josh Kasovich, another guy. And I know the September call-ups, maybe they might have some room to bring a guy like that up and maybe, you know, give Davis a rest and then maybe make some decisions later on down the road. But I just wanted to get your guys' thoughts on it.
Sure. Hey, appreciate the call. As always, John, thank you for joining us here on Jays Talk. Let's do the Roden conversation first, Nick, just because I didn't actually realize he had done. I know the Bisons won today, but I hadn't seen that he had such a great outing. Good for him. But Roden, I think the only obstacle to Roden coming up, because I'm certainly not opposed to it. You want to see as many. We talk so much about wanting to see as much from young guys as much as humanly possible. Roden's a candidate. Jonathan Classe is a candidate. Kasovich is a candidate, pardon me. Certainly a lot of these guys could be guys who are called up. I believe one of the obstacles for Roden, though, is he's not on the 40-man. So if he's not on the 40-man, then there would have to be some kind of corresponding roster move in terms of like someone going. So, you know, I do kind of wonder with Bo, probably not that. I mean, Bo is still on the 40-man, obviously, because he's on the 60-day, he's on the 10-day IL. But I just wonder with Bo's imminent return, you still have to clear a spot on the active roster for Bo's return. And don't get me wrong, like there are probably a couple of guys you could easily, like you could probably DFA like a Yerry Rodriguez if you had to, or, you know, there are options to be had if you really needed a clear spot on the 40-man. But I do wonder if that's the hang up right now. Having said that, if we don't see Roden before the end of the season, I'd probably be like a little disappointed because we've talked about him, I feel like, at different spots all season. Like I remember having a conversation with Shai in the first week of spring training, and Shai saying, yeah, like many people within the organization are very, very impressed by what they've seen from Alan Roden. And that was months ago. So I do wonder if we don't see Alan Roden. He would have been my pick from all the guys in the minors, maybe right next to Class A, just because he's a new addition, like a lot of these other guys, Wagner and Loperfido specifically. But I'm curious, what do you think? Do you think we see Roden at all this year?
I would be surprised at this point because now would have been the time, right? When the rosters expand, it would have been a good moment to do it. With David Schneider, I think the caller makes a good point that there probably was a time when sending him down might have been the right thing to do, when there would have been runway for him to then come back.
Right.
And now that there isn't really time to make all that work, it feels like he's going to stick around and he's going to maybe just kind of play sparingly. When they brought up Luis De Los Santos, that sent a message to me that they really want to zero in on the guys who are there today. He's someone they don't really feel obligated to get too many at-bats to. Again, we referred to him earlier in the show as sort of a minor league veteran. I think that's a fair description of him. And so instead of bringing up someone like Roden, who you kind of don't want to rot on the bench, you want him to play consistently, it makes sense that they're like, these are the guys that we want to evaluate at the big league level today. Now that can change, and there could be injuries, and there's all sorts of things that can happen that would maybe prompt Roden coming up. It'd be interesting to see him, undoubtedly. One of the other hurdles he faces is that he's profiles pretty similarly to some of the other guys they have. Like, he is someone who is a left-handed hitter who is plate discipline and contact oriented. And you've got Horwitz, you've got Wagner already sort of doing that at the plate. again, that doesn't mean he can never fit with the team, but he's a bit of a tricky fit because, again, he's left-handed, he's a corner outfielder, and he's not so much a power threat. And I think they want to see, you know, Lo Perfido, for instance, is like someone he's sort of competing with inside the organization. They want to see what Lo Perfido can do right now. At this point, Roden's a couple of rungs down the depth chart, but that doesn't mean he can't climb or that maybe come spring training, you put together a big spring training entering 2025 and enter the picture a little bit more. But he deserves a lot of credit because he was really good at double A, you know, both this year and last year. And then he got promoted to triple A and he kind of kept on rolling with a pretty similar batting line. So he's done everything the organization could have really asked of him. It's just a matter of finding the right opportunity.
416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. Those are the numbers for you to call. 590-590, name and location. That's the People's Text Line. A whole whack of text here, Nick. We'll get to you on the other side of the break. You're listening to Jay's Talk Show and Nick with you on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
A pitch calm, lost, Leo on the ground. Said hi to some fans. Didn't expect to be over there at that point in the game. It's an unbelievable play. Just no regard for the wall. I found myself almost on the field worrying about him, and then I look and Martin's coming around, and you kind of forget the rule that when the player goes out of the freaking field, you get one base. But just a great play. Just wanted to make sure Leo was okay. Thankfully, he was. Of course, the next ball, you know, popped up right to him. He kind of hit his head a little bit on the railing, but. He had a tough day at the yard for a ribby and a nice put out there.
That is John Schneider speaking to the media about the ridiculous Leo Jimenez moment in the bottom of the fourth inning. My goodness, great stuff from Leo Jimenez and a great heads-up play from Addison Barger as well. But a moment that was kind of, Nick, became a little scary, honestly, because Jimenez goes over the wall into the netting with the ball in his glove, keeps the ball in his glove, and he kind of looked like he might have gotten injured very briefly, and maybe all that happened was he got caught in the netting, gets the wind knocked out of him, was unable to get out because it kind of looked like he was stuck in place. The fans all kind of around him there at Target Field, but hey, I mean, he seemed to be okay. An incredible play from Leo Jimenez, and Schneider mentioned there, a great heads-up play from Barger to take the ball and make a great throw to serve and to get the runner going home. And I mean, yeah, ultimately that play was erased, but boy, they all probably deserve a little credit.
It was a classic situation where you think if you watch a baseball game, there's a chance that you'll see something you've never seen before in your life. And that's the old cliche. And to be honest, there's a lot of truth to it. And you know, I don't recall seeing a guy jumping over into the stands like that. First of all, getting caught in the net, which seems to be what happened. And then another player coming over, taking the ball out of his glove and then throwing an absolute strike to the plate. A very heads up play by Addison Barger, as you mentioned, for a guy, you know, who's a rookie and not experienced at this level. You know, when you and I were watching this in the studio, it was scary because there wasn't movement from him. Like right. There was the catch, and then Spencer Horwitz did a bit of a celebration to celebrate the out. And then suddenly they're calling over the trainer and the coaching staff. And so it's easy to imagine, you know, there's a lot of concrete there. There's the stairs, there's the railings, there's fans, like what he could have crashed into. It sounds like maybe he hit his head a bit, according to John Schneider, but he could have hit his head in a really, really scary way. And so this is, you know, arguably a pretty good outcome from them, that the fact that he's just a little bit banged up and there's nothing serious there. You know, we talked earlier in the show about the idea of how much do these games matter. And that's, you know, that's a bit of a controversial part about what happened today's game and the lack of pinch hitters at the end. But this is Leo Jimenez showing you that the game matters to him. And that's what these young players are doing. They are trying to prove themselves, and he's willing to sacrifice his body. And that is a cliche that belongs to hockey more traditionally than it does to baseball. But there is, you know, if he had not made that attempt, if he had just let the ball go out of bounds, I don't think anyone would have been super angry at him. No one would have said, oh, this guy's not putting in an effort, he's just letting it go. People would have understood that. It's like, oh, that's in the netting, there wasn't really a play there. That happens all the time. And he made the choice to go above and beyond. And not only did he make the effort, he also made the play. So it's worth being extremely impressed with Leo Jimenez for that play. And, you know, and Barger a little bit too, even though it didn't end up counting due to the rule that Schneider alluded to there, where you just get a single base for that. It's an incredible play. You know, it really is maybe the best catch of the Blue Jays season overall, or perhaps in the kind of non-Dalton Varsho category.
That is Nick Ashbourne. I'm Sho Ali. You're listening to Jay's Talk here on the Sportsnet Radio Network. We got about 10 minutes or so before we get out of here. Nick, let's go back to the text line. 590-590, name and location. So let's see here. There's a couple of texts here about us making excuses. So Henry from Mississauga, you guys should change the name of your show to Jay's Excuses. You're already always making excuses for the Jays, especially Schneider's terrible managing. And then another one from Trish in New Brunswick. This is less about us, but Toronto Blue Jays showed total disrespect for thousands of fans from Western Canada. This weekend, John Schneider said they appreciated the fan support. That's BS. Instead of trying to win, he left the best players on the bench. And Jen in Toronto, Jen, always nice to hear from you. She says, I think in certain circumstances, the traveling fans, not in all venues, deserve to see Vlad at least pinch hit. I'm sure he would have been fine with that. That's Jen in Toronto. I will say, I'm not sure like what excuses we've made for John Schneider specifically, but I will say, I mean, if you're talking about Schneider and like his lineup construction or pinch hitting or not pinch hitting a guy or in past conversations, like not just you and I, but just like over the course of the season, whether it's me or you or Blair and Parker or whoever, Blake does the shows as well. Like whoever it is, I feel like a lot of the conversations about Schneider specifically, Nick, for me, always come back to the question, well, how much do you believe Schneider is actually in charge of a lot of the decisions that go on? Like, I'm sure in like the macro, or pardon me, in the micro, he does get some leeway, but you can't tell me that like the decision to not pinch hit literally any of them, as much as I didn't like it, falls solely on John Schneider. Like, it must fall on other people, especially Ross Atkins. Like, I think that's why the conversation for me about the front office has not largely changed when it comes to what needs to happen in the offseason, but I mean, man, like it's just, you know what I mean? Like, I just feel like you can't put this on John Schneider when so many other people wear hats on decision-making processes for the Blue Jays.
John Schneider's title is manager, but effectively he is a middle manager. And yes, there is some leeway in terms of what he can do, but there are also certain occasions where things, and I think especially things that relate to the health of the players, can come from elsewhere in the organization. So there are definitely situations where a player maybe gets arrested. You know, I'm sure John Schneider would love to put Vladdy Wrightem number three in the lineup every single day, because that would give him a better chance of having a better record as a manager. And that is what he, in theory, should care about the most, as someone whose, you know, win and loss record is generally speaking how a manager is evaluated. So there's an element of that that goes into it. Yeah, I'd like to believe what we're doing is providing the rationale for why things happen, as opposed to specifically providing excuses for the Blue Jays front office, because I think there is, you know, there's valid criticism on either side. You could say that, you know, the Blue Jays are, yeah, a little bit tone deaf at times. Like, you think about, the Blue Jays have often said, the front office has often said that in terms of connecting with the fans and fostering a good relationship with the fans, it is about winning ball games. And so every decision that they make is generally speaking about the competitive prospects of the team. If it's not in the short term, then it's in the long term. And so I understand when people say things like, you know, these fans are being disrespected, they have gone a long distance to come and see this team, and they should see the team give the best possible effort. It reminds me a lot about Vladimir Guerrero Jr. and his day off on Victoria Day.
That's right.
Way back in the day, things like that. I think the sad reality is that it's just not something that is considered. Like, the team is trying to keep the players healthy, develop the players, evaluate the players, and then in seasons where they're more competitive, win games. And that is their focus. And their belief is that if they are continually a team that is in this conversation, a team that is winning games, is making the playoffs, then the fans will have a good relationship with them and that team just by virtue of the team being successful. I think there's a little bit more to it than that. I think part of the reason why this front office is so hated is because they've not engendered a good relationship with the fans that goes beyond whatever success is on the field. But that has been their philosophy. If we win games consistently over time and we have a successful franchise, then fans will have a good relationship with the Toronto Blue Jays. And it's not always as simple as that. And I think we see that in the amount of vitriol against this front office, because let's be honest, like, the team has made the playoffs quite a bit. They've put together some good teams. Like, there are some awful MLB franchises out there that have been far less successful than the Blue Jays recently, but this has to be one of the most hated front offices in all of baseball.
Yeah, I mean, to your point, there's a text here from Jason in Thornhill, and Jason, appreciate the text. He says, hey guys, like seeing the kids play, but in truth, this is more than a little bit of fool's gold. I'm glad for these losses. Perhaps Rogers will really realize what a mess Shapiro and Atkins have led us into and demand that changes our changes are made at the management level. That's from Jason and Thornhill. And I mean, like, I've said this too many times, but I don't, like, I mean, I think you can do two things, right? You can give some credit for the, to the front office for some things they have done, like signing Kevin Gausman or trading for Jose Berríos or any of the moves made at the deadline that you've liked this year, while also recognizing they've done a poor job stocking the cupboard and signing off season acquisitions, at least recently, going back to last year, overcorrecting maybe a little too much, and that changes need to be made. I think I've been pretty steady on that sense in the idea that generally going forward, you know, even if I think it will remain the same, you know, generally speaking, I would not be crying any tears if both Mark Shapiro and Ross Atkins were not involved with the Blue Jays next year. Like I said, I don't think that's going to change necessarily based on all the conversations we've heard this season. But I mean, I would be happy to be surprised. But I kind of agree with Jason. I don't think a 17 and 12 month of August is going to necessarily pull the curtain over anyone's eyes. Like, I think we still realize that changes need to be made when, you know, still you go into the first game of September, you lose it, and you're sitting well below 500 still.
Yeah, there's room for, you know, shades of gray here, right? They've been there since 2016, this front office. And so inevitably in that time, you are going to make some good transactions. And you might even have some surprisingly lucky years. You could argue the Blue Jays have had some unlucky years based on the quality of the teams they've put together. Like, if we ran the Blue Jays front office, you and I show, and we sat down, it was me, you, a couple cups of coffee, maybe a few beers and a magic eight ball, we would make the occasional excellent transaction. That's just the way it goes. Like, you'd sign a name we saw appear on MLB trade rumors. That guy's a free agent. Bang, sign. You never know. You get a Bowden Francis like bump him. They are going to make good moves just because they've made so many moves, because they've been here for nearly a decade. They're going to make bad moves again because they've been here and they've made so many moves. And so what you do is you look at the entire body of work and you say, are we happy with this body of work? And, you know, they could argue this team has consistently been in the playoffs. It has been a winning ball club a lot of the time. And there are some good things to say about this tenure. But generally speaking, the goals that they've set out for in terms of competing for World Series and making deep runs in the playoffs, the only time where they've had success with that has been in 2016. And that was, you know, largely an inherited team. Now, there were moves made that helped them along the way with that as well. I don't want to take too much credit away, but that is the reality. And I do feel bad for them, a sense, because again, this hatred sometimes feels disproportionate to how bad the Blue Jays have been, because a lot of the time they've been good. But at the end of the day, when you have a long enough period of time, it does become about results. In a short period of time, you can say, oh, the process is good. Luck was good. Luck was bad. It's hard to say from 3 years how good something is. But when you're talking about a longer period of time, you do have to live and die with the results to a certain extent. And I understand why people are disappointed with those results. Now, is that going to be enough to cause there to be a change? I'm not so sure. As you said, kind of the tea leaves that we're seeing right now does not necessarily look like there's going to be a change of course before 2025, but these things are on the table. And I'd be interested to see what the fan response would be, just because the drum has been beat heavily for, you know, basically 2 years now for this change. And so it has become a pretty negative fan base in that sense. And I wonder if there was a new front office in place that you'd see kind of a new sense of optimism and enthusiasm from this fan base.
You probably would, honestly. Like, I really do think, I mean, let me tell you right now, based on the text line, based on the calls we've gotten, like, all year, I'm just going to go out on a limb and say that if Ross Atkins and Mark Shapiro are still in charge of this team come, like, the spring of next year, it ain't going to be pretty from the fan base. Like, it's going to be a lot of the same kind. And maybe they have a chance to buy back some goodwill if they sign big free agents. But if they don't, and you get another free agency period similar to what we got last year, then I'm telling you, it's going to be pretty negative. I see a text here from James and Barry. He says, I have to say, it's very embarrassing for the Twins to win by only one run against 9 AAA players. Even if the Twins make the playoffs, they aren't going anywhere. I do tend to believe that the Twins have a very good pitching staff, and their offense has been kind of MIA. I mean, they're kind of MIA for this entire series. They scored 6 runs in 3 games, if you think about it. They won the first game 2-0, lost the second game 15-0, and then won today 4-3. So they scored, 6 runs in 3 games. Not great. I tend to agree. Having said that, getting to the playoffs, truly, you got Pablo Lopez in front of your rotation, probably a lot of things can go right for you. I see, Russ in Kingston. We'll wrap up on this one. Russ says, this game, I think, shows the Jays' flaws. Without Vladdy in the lineup, it's just not a very good lineup, and their bullpen is very shallow. I kind of agree. Like, I mean, it's hard not to agree with that, certainly when it comes to Russ's text, but it's kind of funny because that was kind of like my initial thought when I saw the lineup for today's ball game. I thought to myself, boy, I really hope this is not a preview of what's to come in like 1.5 years, let's say.
Yeah, and there's a big difference between having Vladdy stay in the third spot and then having a couple younger guys on either side of him. And, you know, the way the lineup looks when Kirk, who's actually been, you know, fairly decent for a few months here, is in there over Servan, who has been, to be honest, kind of a zero at the plate in his short MLB career. You know, Luis Del Santo, someone you obviously don't expect very much from. Like, the Blue Jays, a lot of teams have, you know, they've got kind of a 9 or 10 guys with platoon sort of starting lineup of proven guys they roll through, and then on a certain day, a couple of them are getting a day off, so you've got kind of 7 proven guys in the lineup and then 2 kind of random bench guys. And the Blue Jays, they only kind of have 4 of those guys, and so then you take all 4 out. Like, normally you already have 5 guys who are relatively unproven, and then you bring it up to 9. Like, this really did feel like a spring training split squad game. It did feel like a bit of a AAA lineup, and the Twins probably are happy to have escaped with a win, because it would have been a little bit embarrassing to lose this group, to be honest.
Well, Nick, that does it for us here on Jays Talk. It's been a fun little while for us here, but we're back together again at the end of the month.
Yeah, looking forward to it. It's been a great run this week and a couple weeks off for me at least, so I'm looking forward to coming back too.
That is Nick Ashbourne. I'm Sho Ali. Appreciate you being with us on Blue Jays Baseball, brought to you by the local family-owned Crown Rust Control Centers in Antigonish and New Glasgow, Nova Scotia. Protect your vehicle from rust today. Find your local family-owned Crown at crown.com, Canada's number one rust protection. For Nick, Ben, Chris, Tom, Nick Blackmore, I'm Sho Ali. That does it for us. Blair and Barker have you covered the rest of the week, starting with Tuesday with the Phillies in town for 2. Enjoy the day off tomorrow, everyone. Enjoy the last half of your long weekend. Make it a good one wherever you are. I'm back next weekend. We'll talk to you later.